Welcome to a new format of the Ghost Rap podcast where I'm trying something different. I'm rather going to look back on an entire month and pick out five things that I think were really, really useful for everyone to learn about the markets. Of course, the benefit of looking back over a month rather than a week is firstly, we can see how things really played out. And secondly, we have more company announcements to choose from, so we can do a better job of comparing how things are going within a given sector. If you hate this though, and you would love it to go back to how it was, where I do two or three podcasts a month, then let me know. But in the meantime, let's move into something new and see what you think. The Ghost Rap podcast is brought to you by Forvis Mazars, an internationally integrated partnership operating in over 100 countries and territories, including South Africa, delivering audit and assurance, tax advisory, and consulting services to clients. The first thing to learn from November is that per share numbers are what really count in the property sector. Property is back, and in a big way, driven by decreasing interest rates and other very helpful trends like the return to office. The local property funds are focusing on optimizing their exposure, in many cases towards the Western Cape actually, while some of the European-focused funds are back at it with capital raising activities, and that's how you know that things are getting better in the sector. Now, one of the ways to raise capital is just to hang on to it. Yes, I'm talking about scrip dividends here, giving shareholders the ability to choose to receive shares instead of cash. This is effectively a miniature rights issue, something that property funds just love doing. Now, the way that Sirius Real Estate has been raising capital is the good old-fashioned way, in a typical accelerated book build structure where the advisors get their phones out, get hold of institutional investors, and test their appetite for shares. At Nepi Rockcastle, some of the recent activity has been that scrip dividend alternative. And it doesn't matter which way you look at it, the reality is that at both funds, there are then more shares in issue than would otherwise be the case. Now, unless the capital can be deployed timeously into strong opportunities, this creates a near-term drag on performance. For example, Sirius Real Estate grew funds from operations, which is a key metric in property, by 14.5% for the 6 months to September. That sounds fantastic on paper, but some of that is due to the deployment of capital. In other words, they went and actually bought some of this performance. The right metric is therefore to always look at the per share performance, because that's ultimately what you care about as a shareholder. It's easy to just raise money, spend it on revenue and say, hey, our revenue got bigger. But did you spend it in the right way? And funds from operations per share actually fell by 5.5%. Now, this is because of two substantial recent capital raisings and how long it's taken to actually deploy that money, because the approach that Sirius took was to raise the money ahead of actually needing it, which is quite unusual in the property sector. You see that kind of stuff in the tech sector, not the property sector. A war chest creates quite a cash drag effect on returns, so that's something to always be wary of in this sector. Over at Nepi Rockcastle, a business update for the first 9 months of the year shows net operating income up 12.3% overall. On a like-for-like basis, up 8.4%, so that gap there tells you that once again there have been property acquisitions. But here's another chunky gap, the difference between that net operating income growth and the expected increase in distributable earnings per share for FY24, which is just 5.5%. Again, much lower than the rate at which the total group is growing. Moral of the story here, be wary of dilution at property funds. Just because the fund is doing really well over time doesn't mean that your shares are doing well. In fact, if you held an equally weighted basket of Nepi Rockcastle and Sirius Real Estate this year, you would be feeling disappointed with the lack of overall share price growth. Because year to date, Sirius is down 9.4% and Nepi Rockcastle is up 10.1%. And those two performances would largely offset each other if that was the basket that you had bought, leaving you with only dividends to show for yourself. Sticking with the capital raising theme, we learnt in November that the market is hungry for quality IPOs. Now, this got so much attention during November that we really don't need to go into lots of detail here. But still, it would be wrong not to mention it at all, because November was the month of Boxer's listing as the most important story on the JSE. Pick n Pay priced this capital raise for success, frankly, because they couldn't afford for it to fail under any circumstances. As the second step in the two-step recapitalization plan, with the first step having been a rights issue in the market, Pick n Pay needed to raise money efficiently from the sell down of the Boxer stake, even if this meant leaving money on the table, as they say in IPO land. That is typically how IPOs work. The initial raise is priced competitively to create loads of interest among investors, and then on the first day of public trading, the share price tends to go up and the headlines are positive. This is exactly what has happened at Boxer, with Pick n Pay ticking its box of raising 8.5 billion rand and reducing its stake to 65.6%, while the Boxer management team have ticked their box of getting a high quality shareholder register and a successful listing. Of course, all eyes will now be on Pick n Pay to see if they can actually turn the business around. Thanks to the lack of load shedding and the general improvement in SA Inc. sentiment this year, the share price has actually done very well year to date as the market started to believe in a turnaround. Pick n Pay is up 54% this year, whereas ShopRite, the market darling, is only up 10.5% year to date. But if you look over 5 years, the story is completely different, and the deviation in performance versus ShopRite is quite breathtaking actually, showing the power of stock picking even in a market that might seem a little bit boring to you, like grocery retail. Over 5 years, Pick n Pay is down 46% and ShopRite is up 124%. Of course, the really fun chart to draw a year from now will be Boxer versus Pick n Pay and ShopRite. I think that the current price for Boxer is a pretty decent reflection of fair value, so I wouldn't expect it to return much more than around 8 to 10% a year from here. But perhaps I'll be pleasantly surprised. The third thing we learnt in November is that poultry businesses are making money again. That's very good news for a country that depends on chicken. In a structurally low margin business like poultry, it makes a huge difference when things start to go well. Just consider Astral for a moment, where revenue was up just 6% for the year ended September, yet that was enough to drive a massive swing from a headline loss per share of 13 Rand 24 to headline earnings per share of 19 Rand 20. Thanks to cost containment and generally better operating conditions in the sector, a modest uptick in revenue there dropped to the bottom line, as they say, and created a much healthier income statement. Over at Quantum Foods, where there has been plenty of noise around shareholder activism and the behavior of the board, revenue for the year ended September actually decreased by 8.9%, so that's very different to Astral. On paper, it looks like a poor result, but despite this, headline earnings per share swung from a loss of 17.4 cents to profit of 80.4 cents. Like at Astral, that's a huge positive swing. When you look at the segments, you'll see some other wild swings, like the eggs business, for example, which suffered a revenue drop of 35% and yet moved from an operating loss of 42 million rand to an operating profit of 140 million rand. In these businesses with such tight margins, like in the poultry sector, revenue is not always the best predictor of performance. Sure, it helps when revenue goes up, but here we have Astral and Quantum with two different revenue shapes in the past year, yet both achieved a substantial improvement in profits. This just tells you that when margins are so tight, it really is more about what happens in the margins further down the income statement rather than anything else. All you need is some decent cost control or a little bit of luck and things can go well. Conversely, some bad luck, a change in input costs, or of course, load shedding, and things can go really badly. On to the fourth thing we learnt in November, and I'm afraid that it's Murray and Roberts, which really is a catastrophe. Murray and Roberts is now suspended from trading. This is because the company is in business rescue, based on forecasts of underlying performance and the immense debt burden that they need to address by January 2026. There are a lot of factors at play here, not least of all key client De Beers scaling back on its capex and leaving the Murray and Roberts cementation business in crisis. One of the biggest risks in any business is key client dependencies. Who would have guessed that the threat of lab-grown diamonds and the impact that is having on De Beers would then have such a profound negative hit on Murray and Roberts? The overall balance sheet pressures at Murray and Roberts have been a mess for their OptiPower division, which has been incurring substantial losses that Murray and Roberts simply cannot afford. They currently owe 409 million rand at group level to their banking consortium, and that amount is due in January 2026, so there is no room for subsidiaries to be making losses. The share price chart really does tell the story this year. I'm afraid it's now down 25% year to date, but it's the peak to trough that really tells the story. It has been suspended from trading at 110 cents per share, and the 52-week high is around 330 cents per share, and that was as recent as August 2024. So that is a horrible, horrible outcome for those who were punting at this thing and have now just watched it wash away. And there's no guarantee whatsoever that there will be any equity value left at the end of this business rescue process. It really is a mess. Let's bring it home now with the fifth and final insight in this Ghostwrap podcast from November, and that is that MultiChoice really, really needs the Canal Plus deal to close. MultiChoice released an interim trading statement and it called its current conditions the most challenging environment in the group's history, and that of course set the scene for the release of full results. However, there have been pretty decent numbers coming out of media sector peers like eMedia, which is part of HCI, and African Media Entertainment, which has a bunch of radio assets. So I'm not really sure that it's because the media industry is inherently broken. If anything, I think it's because MultiChoice is betting everything on building a business for sale, not a business that can make profits. And there is a very big difference between those two concepts. When you are building for sale, you are chasing scale in a way that will be appealing to an international buyer. The investment in building out the African streaming technology is relevant here, which is part of what attracted the eye of Canal Plus. Contrast this to a group like eMedia, which focuses on building slowly and surely within South Africa rather than trying to build this empire across Africa. They keep costs at bay, they are well prepared for an improvement as load shedding has disappeared. It's just a completely different way of building a group. And the problem at MultiChoice is that spending more and winning more subscribers are not the same thing, because in my opinion, they are not getting the basics right. Subscriber numbers are down 5% in South Africa and 15% in rest of Africa. That is a scary statistic when you consider the extent of investment in rest of Africa. The group now finds itself in a negative equity position, and they achieved adjusted core headline earnings of a paltry 7 million rand in the latest period, so they are barely profitable. At this stage, I honestly don't know what MultiChoice will do if the Canal Plus deal falls through, and when you consider what Vodacom and Remgro have been through to try and get their fiber deal approved, I would not want my investment case to depend on whether or not regulators say yes, and more importantly, whether or not they say yes timeously, because MultiChoice does not have a lot of time here, not with how their current performance is going. And that's a wrap. Please remember that nothing you hear on the Ghostwrap podcast should be taken as advice. Please do your own research and visit ghostmail.co.za for more insights into the market.